To another episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd, and joining me today is Wario Will.
Oh boy, the elections are done, and by the time you listen to this podcast, I hope you all got your gaming watches ready and waiting. I'm just waiting for mine right now, or probably be at Nintendo NYC, but I'm just like getting ready for this upcoming weekend, so I'm ready for this. So yeah, good days.
And back from counting all the votes in North Carolina is Tyler Tillius. Tillius Tyler.
It was a lot of counting. It was way too much counting. I have two things to say. One, first of all, I was not ducking Will for the second month in a row after a Splatfest win for him.
Right.
Well, congratulations. I realize it's a little sus that I missed two Splatfest losses in a row.
Sus.
But I respect. Will is very aggressive when he wins Splatfest, like so aggressive that it takes me aback a little bit. So I honestly didn't know if Will played. So I had to ask if he played, and he came with the receipts. It was a tough moment for me. You have to tip the cap sometimes. And one more thing, Todd, you're the host. We say you're the host. Sometimes you prove it. And with that title last week, I'm telling you, I was like glued to my TV, like obsessed with the stupid election, like so many other people. That gave me such a laugh. That was such a perfect title. It was hilarious. Well done.
Yeah, as with many of our titles here on NEP, it came like right before the podcast because I'm like, we were going to do our main event tonight last week, and I was like, I want to do something election themed, and then I just remembered that dumb tweet, and I'm like, yep, stop the splat count.
so fun.
Perfect. Perfect. All right, well, we got a fun show lined up for you tonight, and we're going to all start off with, what have you been playing? Tyler, after your election session, I'm sure you had to play some video games to wipe the stain from your mind. So what have you been playing?
So I've been playing something a little weird. I've been playing Tales of Vesperia Definitive Edition on Switch.
Why is that weird?
Because why would anybody be playing Tales of Vesperia Definitive Edition right now?
Have you met Will?
I really need to try to play Tales of Vesperia. I know it's like a very good entry.
Yeah, so I played Zillia back on the PS3. That was the first one that I got me into the series. Loved it. I played it twice, and then its sequel was great also. But I think so. I started Zestria, but I never really got far because I gave my brother my PlayStation. But this one, when I picked it up, I kind of, because it's a definitive edition, I expected like a beautiful remaster. And, like, it's not a beautiful remaster. Even on other consoles, like, it's not just the Switch's performance. The graphics are very blurry, and it's not, like, if you're looking for a visual stunner, this one isn't it. It definitely, you could tell if they really wanted to go all out and give it a beautiful, fresh, new coat of paint, it would look great. The settings are phenomenal.
It was originally on 360.
Right. I think it was an exclusive on the 360. Which is rare for a Tales of game. But so it's really cool that we've actually gotten it. And if you haven't played these games, I think so the combat system is, I think you would call it a real-time action combat system. But it's an RPG, and like you basically are, it's almost like a 3D fighting game. Like you're running back and forth, targeting enemies, doing combos and stuff like that. It's really fun. It's really fluid, generally speaking. This one, the first couple battles were like really stiff. Like I was like, this is showing its age immensely, not only on the graphics, but the combat is really, really stiff. But I started to get used to it. And I think as you progress, you learn new abilities that add to your arsenal. So now I'm starting to string stuff together and having an easier time. Although the game is still pretty hard. I only put it on normal, and like there have been some close calls, and I'm still pretty early. But like all Tales of games, it tells a grandiose story and an anime art style, like similar to a medieval folklore kind of story. Ooh. Very grand scale, fantastical world. And the characters are great. I love the characters in Zillia, and I already love the characters in this one. I just got Rita Mordio, the mage, on my team, really funny. Just a cool, kind of quirky character. The main character's like kind of your typical cool dude, doesn't really care.
Troy Baker. His performance is just absolutely stunning.
It's great. It's really, really great, and it adds a lot to the character. I enjoy Yuri a lot. So the cast is really good. I haven't met everybody, I'm sure. I'm still looking for. I think there's this Knight Flynn who I'm trying to find, and I think he's on the cover. I'd imagine he's on the cover with the blonde hair dude, but I haven't actually met him in the game yet. So it's really fun, and it was cheap. I got it at a used game store like a year ago, probably, maybe even longer. I just never played it.
Shocker.
But yeah, right? It was something I wasn't really, like, it was on my radar, but it wasn't really on my radar. I knew it was out, but I didn't think I would ever get it. And I think I saw it for like $14, and I was like, okay, that's a steal. I'm going to grab it. So I definitely am enjoying it, and I would recommend it if that's your cup of tea. If it's not your cup of tea, you know, you're probably better off getting you're better off skipping it. It's not like it's a must play, but it's right down my wheelhouse, and I'm having a good time.
Yeah, if anything else, Berserk is definitely one of more praise entries in the TS franchise. It was such a shame that we didn't get it back during the GameCube era, as it was only a 360 exclusive. But yeah, Berserk is just arguably the next step from Symphonia, and just everything about it, from story-wise, the character, everything else, it was just like nothing really compared to Berserk. Like, even at the later entries like Zestria, and yeah, I think, oh man, it's to the point I don't even know the
Berseria, I think, is the newest one. I haven't played that one. I got it from my brother, but I don't know if he's played it yet either.
Because actually, I know, like, there was like the one with that was the whole Edgelord theme with all the loss and all that.
Yeah,
and it's just like there's a lot of entries like afterwards. Like, it doesn't really stick to me like with like Berseria Symphonia, sadly enough. So, but again, like, Vespera is definitely one of the high tier entries on the of the franchise. So yeah,
Zillia was again great, like, super good. That story was amazing. The characters were great. It was like one of those few plots that, like, I like had stuck with me afterwards. It like when I was playing it, it really resonated with my day to day. I just the characters were phenomenal in that one. So it's interesting because so far, like, I would say Zillia hooked me more, but that might be largely like I'm hooked on this one too, so it's kind of splitting hairs.
So yeah, this is definitely a good entry. So yeah, I won't argue there.
I've honestly never played a Tails game. That's just the truth. It never happened. Neither never interested me or whatever. I've seen like some of them, like Tales of Symphonia. Didn't they do like a remake of one of them recently? No, that was Trials of Mana, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. But I don't know, if they make a new one, like a pure one for just Switch, I might try it out. But I remember Vesperia coming out, and it was meant to be a big deal, and I guess it did okay on the system, but I never was going to try it. But I'm glad you're trying it, Tyler. Now,
I think the next entry for like the next gen consoles is Tales of Crystoria. I know there's like a new protagonist, like that's all I remember, but that is the next entry that's coming up in for the next gen console. So here's hoping when we get up for Switch. Here's hoping. Okay, back to go.
Thank you. All right, so I have a bone to pick with one Talius Tyler, because
what?
As I mentioned on the podcast last week, one of the birthday gifts that I got from my parents was Super Mario 3D All-Stars. And I finally got the chance to play Super Mario 3D All-Stars. And like a good progressive gamer would do, I started at the beginning with Super Mario 64. And all I could hear as I started to play this game was Tyler praising this title and saying how much this game holds up and so on and so forth. How high were you when you played this?
Listen, I don't smoke. Drugs are bad.
Uh-huh. So
you don't think it holds up?
Parts of it, sure. But, okay, there are... First of all, the camera sucks.
Yeah, no, the camera sucks. 100%.
The controls at times are incredibly finicky. All right, and I know that part of it was that this is, you know, a revolutionary. I have known that this was revolutionary back in the day, but there are elements to it that just make no gosh dang sense. Like in the first star on the Jolly Roger level, you have to go down, you have to get the treasure trunks, and you know, open them in a specific order, and then the water drains, right?
Yes.
So you'd think, using modern gaming logic, that, okay, I just gotta go up and go get hit the block and get the star. But the ground is apparently made of ice, even though you're underwater, and then the water drains, so it should just be, you know, ground.
Is it supposed to be ice? I think it's just, like, supposed to be really steep and slippery.
Yeah,
steep
I know. That was a joke.
The graphics are not great. So.
No, that's true, too. But I give that the pass, because that's in 64 area. So that one I give it a pass on. But it's just, like, I am struggling to get up these dang platforms, because every time I
that
even
part
go, like,
is tricky.
Exactly!
Well, okay, but here's the thing. So you didn't play it as a kid then, or did you?
I played it. I didn't own the game, but I had a friend who did, and I remember playing like certain, like I remember doing the wing cap level for whatever reason. Maybe it was a demo at a Toys R Us. I don't remember, but I never played it like start to finish.
Yeah.
Not once. So this is my first experience with it, and all I can say is thank God we advanced past this. It's so bad at times. Some parts of it is fun. Sure, it's absolutely fun. I like the idea of the going into the paintings. I like the idea, which obviously was kept in further or later Mario games, of, you know, multiple levels having multiple stars, which is a trademark of Odyssey with the moons, because you can have like what 20 moons in a single level, you know. And I like that
more than
I like
that, yeah.
I like how, you know, once you get one star, it kind of opens up everything else, and that's cool. I like that progression. But other things is like, you know, the cannon, where you have to get onto the island to get the star and then get the coin. And if you don't shoot it exactly right, you're gonna go hitting the island, or you're gonna go flying over the island. It took me like 6 tries to get the dang, and I shot myself at the tree. And
what you have to do. I was gonna say that.
I used the tree as my sight, but I missed it the first time because I'm like, okay, maybe right for the trunk. No, you have to aim for the branches. And I was like, oh, come on. So, and like and going back to the Jolly Roger level, I kind of understood what they were doing with the trunks, but I didn't realize you had to open them in a specific order and you had like ram into the front of them. So I honestly had to look up a guide, and this is supposed to be like one of the easy stars. Like, what the heck, man? And then of course the slippery slope was total crap. I honestly looked up a video because I thought I was doing it wrong. Because I'm like, am I just missing something, you know? Because I'm trying to jump, and sometimes Mario will cling to the side, and sometimes he won't. It's like, it's so inaccurate. And I'm just like, how? I'm screaming at my Switch, how was this revolutionary?
See, I'm incapable. Sorry, let me take this first, though, because the gripe was with me.
Yeah.
I played this game like 400 times. So... For me, it's funny because that Jolly Roger part does get me. If I let the water go all the way down, then it can be a little bit frustrating. I've also, you know, I've climbed it 100 times, so it's not impossible. But like the trick is just like as soon as you open the chest, turn and swim up the top, and you can get to the top before the water even lowers. And
I thought about doing
platform.
That, but I'm just like, nah, I should probably just let it drain. The game might not let me. I don't know.
And I pictured all the times in my youth, like shooting over the island, just as you said. But then I was going to tell you, like, now I just know to shoot right for the tree. So I think a lot of your points are very fair. Like, I cannot re-experience that game for the first time, and I don't know how my modern gaming self would, if I could just pick it up and be good at it right away, or if it really was like the years and years of playing it growing up that have still like kind of kept me competent at it now. In a lot of ways, so the controls I think are pretty precise. Like, if you play like Spyro or Crash, Mario 64 is just like, it blows them out of the water in terms of tight controls. Compared to the current games, yeah, like a little bit. Like, Mario will like round corners a little like more, not as immediately as you'd want him to. And I see the point of that. And the slide, like when I was young, the slide, you're talking about the ice level slide, right? With the penguin. Did you get to the penguin where he's trying to race you down there yet?
No, I've done the first slide in the cabin. I haven't gotten to the penguin part yet.
Okay, yeah. So that one, like, I remember that was challenging for me back in the day. But now it's just like, yeah, you just hold back when the turns come and, like, you know, you... But I've done it so many times that it's hard for me to say, you know, I'm not a good judge. I think your points probably have a lot more credence than I would initially think, or that these Mario 64 fans who are listening are probably pulling their hair out. And they're probably mad at me now because I think you probably are correct. You do have a point.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, at the time it was so game-changing, and my familiarity with it, like, it works perfectly for me, but yeah. I know it like the back of my hand.
Yeah, well, and I know that's part of the problem. Is like you played it, you know, front to back, you know, leading up to Odyssey. I'm playing it in reverse, where, you know, I've played Odyssey and Galaxy 1 and 2 and all of them, and now I'm looking, going back to the original and saying, okay, let's try this out, and I'm seeing all the game design flaws. Like, this would not hold up if someone tried to make this today, you know, because of, like, all the camera wonkiness and everything. And, like, even just the little things, like the small details. Like, for example, what's the first boss, Tyler?
Are you talking about King Bomb-Omb, or are you talking about the first Bowser?
No, I said boss, so that would be the Bomb-Omb.
Okay,
so,
well, I mean, you sort of, yeah, I mini-boss.
Don't push
but...
it. Anyway, so what? How do you beat King Bomb-Omb?
You just run in a circle around him, and then you grab him, and you throw him onto the thing. But you were throwing him overboard. You were throwing him off the mountain.
Yes,
you...
I was.
Yeah, see, I mean, when I first played the game, I threw him off the mountain. I was like, why isn't this working?
Exactly. Oh, you must fight fair. You told me to throw you onto the royal turf. There's your turf. It's off the mountain. And also, that Bob-omb has hops. Who knew? So, but, like, that's the thing. Like, you when you throw the Bob-omb and you just throw him on the royal turf or whatever, there's nothing happens. You don't get like a shaking motion. It does. There's like a cloud of smoke that shows that you're doing damage. I didn't realize I was doing damage to him. I'm like, is this working? And then after my third hit, he says he's gone, and I'm just like, that's not appetizing. Like, that's not visually stimulating.
I don't know. He swings his arms a little bit, and he makes a sound when he hits the ground.
He does a different grunt.
Yeah,
it's
he
a
does.
It's a very slight grunt. I'm not just looking for audio cues. I'm looking for visual cues. All
right? There's like a little pout, but you're right. The effects aren't what they would be now.
Yeah. So, but it's just like that's what threw me off, because I'm like, I'm not doing anything to this guy. And that's why I try to throw him off the mountain. And he goes, oh, you have to fight fair, dude. You're trying to kill me. What are you talking about? So, like that, and then it's just like those other little things where it's just not clear like what you're supposed to do at times, like with the treasure chest. Like, how was I supposed to know? Am I really supposed to ram myself into these treasure chests all the time while trying to maintain my oxygen supply and like not even in a clue about which ones to go for first? So like that was frustrating. And again, part of it is just the advancement of game design and Nintendo learning from like what they can do and what they can program and all that. But yeah, it's I could see why at the time it's revolutionary, but looking back, it doesn't hold up as much as it probably should. So, and that's saying nothing of the graphics. I mean, like Koopa the Quick looked so weird. Like, when did the only Koopa that gets that big is supposed to be Bowser. That's literally the point. And yet he's like three times your size. So, right. And like King Baba, he was fine actually. The Thwomps, they looked weird. Thwomps looked weird.
Oh, see, that's the Thwomp style to me. Like, the newer Thwomps look weird to me. Like, that's how I picture Thwomps from 64. I did a cool thing in that one where, you fought the giant Thwomp, right? At the top of the tower.
Yeah, so second level. I am right now where I am, I have beaten Bowser the first time.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I made that giant Thwomp, like, fall down and create a bridge to the star in a basket. I saw somebody do it on YouTube where they like did a running jump off his laying down body into the star, and I wanted to recreate it, and I did it. It was so cool, just so satisfying to pull off. Like, there are so many tricks that you can do in that game, and the freedom of movement and the freedom to pretty much do whatever star in whatever order you want for the most part. Really satisfying, and that is definitely innovative. I mean, Odyssey was kind of the first game that went back to that, and you can tell like just how impactful that freedom was to players, because that was one of the number one things people loved about Galaxy or Odyssey, was that you could do pretty much anything at any time. In that way, it's definitely stood up.
Yeah. I mean, you could see how like this translated to Sunshine and Galaxy and Odyssey.
You play Sunshine. I mean, like,
yeah,
that one I think is worse in terms
Black
of
Sheep.
Holding up. Yeah, I'm curious what you think about it. I mean, it's good. I liked Sunshine, but it's not. I think 64 holds up better.
We shall see. So, like, I'm still early because every time I was like, oh, I'm going to have a day off, then something happens. So, tomorrow and Saturday looks like I might have a day off, but we shall see. But, yeah, I just got done beating Bowser for the first time, which was surprisingly easy because I just spun him around and threw him, and, like, first time he hit the bomb. So I'm like, okay. Also, did they just swap out the long so long, Bowser?
I think it's in there.
Okay, because the first time when I threw him, he goes, bye-bye.
Yeah, he does say bye-bye sometimes.
Okay. Just let me make sure, because that's iconic Mario, okay? I don't care who you are.
The dialogue is really funny, too. I never noticed that until I played it back this time. But a lot of the dialogue is actually, like, pretty good. Bowser has some funny lines in there at the end. And I like King Bob-omb. Like, I picture him as this intimidating boss, but he actually, I think you're supposed to read him more as, like, kind of like a cool dude. Like, he, you know, when he's, like, very gracious in defeat when you stomp him, so.
Oh, and thank you for reminding me. That was another problem with the game. Pressing A to talk to people, and you have to be, like, right
there.
That's
right. Oh, yeah.
I'm literally looking at these dang toads in their ghostly forms for whatever reason, and
they're supposed to be sealed in the walls.
That does not come off at all. It looks like they're freaking ghosts.
Oh, yeah, it does. But that's why.
But like, I'm like right in front of them. I'm like pressing A. Mario's jumping, jumping, jumping. And then I move like that super fraction decimal point of an inch. And he's like, oh, here you go, Mario. I'm like, screw you. So, yeah. I'm glad we advanced from there. Not bitter at all. So, all right, Will, how about you? What have you been playing?
For me, I actually have a new game to play finally, and that is Yakuza Like a Dragon, which came out for the PS4 and Xbox 360, and of course going to be available for the next gen consoles. And gotta say, this new entry for Yakuza definitely quite surprised. Again, we have a review on the site currently right now, and for the Yakuza series that's been known for the beat 'em up genre, now going to an RPG style is quite, and so far I don't mind it. I don't mind. I do kind of miss regarding the whole freedom beat 'em up, just again how like all beat 'em ups are using specials, and I'm cutting out again, really.
No, I hear you fine.
Yes, so just when like again this whole change from the to RPG is like very very refreshing to say the least. And if you like games that references other games, like this, apparently the creator of Yakuza really loves Dragon Quest. Like there've been plenty of times when even the character says like, I grew up on the games of Dragon Quest, this is how I became today. And yeah, just like, every battle that I'm in, I always imagine it as I'm in a Dragon Quest battle. It's just, yeah, Kazuga Ichiban is such a great character, just such a guy who just basically wants to be a hero. So, yeah, and also got to give props to the English voice acting, Keiji Tang. And, of course, I'm just surprised they actually managed to go and get the legendary George Takei in this game, which is like, oh, my. I'm just really impressed. So, yeah, overall, Yakuza Like a Dragon, just so much fun with RPG, just grinding. There is grind, to say the least, there is grind. But overall, just again, the new place of Yokohama, learning about the different cultures. Again, it's just basically another Japan tour trip, which, again, at this current age right now, I think this is probably the best time to go on a virtual Japan trip now. So, yeah, it's a very, very great RPG, and it's just a great tourist spot for Japan right now. So, overall, yeah, just saying that, and of course, not everything fame, which probably is a lot, but overall, that's what I'm focusing on. So, yeah, that's a Dragon, very great game.
All right. We'll check the chat. I just left you a message. But while he's checking that, we're going to transition to our news segment now, because this has honestly been a rather busy week. So it's time to go down the warp pipe. And let's start it off with some more sales news, because as we noted last week, there was a lot of Nintendo sales news, including that they have sold over 68 million Switches amongst many other impressive software feats. But the news kept coming, because a lot of people noticed that there were certain games that didn't make the Nintendo advertised news, if you will. And so, being the internet, they couldn't leave it alone. So they started asking about where certain game titles were. And one of them was Fire Emblem Three Houses, which, if you recall, it sold really well. It sold over 2 million in like a month, and we were wondering where it's been since then. Well, it has now sold over 3 million as of June 2020, and it is now officially the best-selling Fire Emblem game ever. The previous owner of that title was Fire Emblem Fates with 2.95 million, And so now Three Houses is the most successful Fire Emblem title. Congrats to Three Houses. Yay. So that makes me happy, because this is a really good game. And it all but secures we're going to get that sequel that we want, of whatever it is. So Fire Emblem Six Houses. Ooh, there you go. I almost want that now. Almost.
We'll just have to wait and see what Intelligence decides to do with the franchise. I mean, like, Three Houses was just absolutely a great, amazing game.
It was.
From the multiple endings, just the branching story. Just that's just the main appeal of it. So what they do from that afterwards, really hard to say. I mean, again, Fates arguably, I mean, again, hate or love it, it is definitely the multiple storyline that's really what dropped that game. Of course, Awakening and Shadows of Valentia. So now with Three Houses, what can he do next? So,
okay, I got an idea. It's a bit bold. All right. So Fire Emblem, the Origami King. What do you think? What do you think, Tyler? Do you think it worked that into the fold?
I think they could.
Yeah, I know. I know Will won't like it, because he'll think the premise is paper thin. So moving on to the other million sellers, because Nintendo realized that they apparently didn't post all the best sellers that they had done for whatever reason. And so here's the list. So Xenoblade Chronicles 2 has officially crossed 2 million sold, which makes it the best-selling game in that franchise. We have Super Mario Maker 2, 5.89 million. The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, 4.57 million. 1-2 Switch, 3.31 million. Tyler's favorite game ever, Mario Tennis Aces, 3.29. Kirby Star Allies, 3.15. I'm surprised by that one. All right, that was like an under-the-radar, it's doing good. Donkey Kong, oh, you love this one, Tyler. Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze sold 2.93 million.
All right.
It's a port.
Donkey Kong over Kirby. I mean, Kirby has a higher number, but that was a unique original game. This was a port. I'm saying that's great news for Team Donkey Kong.
Oh, yeah. Then Tyler's other greatest game of all time, ARMS, 2.47 million. That one really dropped off. Like, if you recall, it sold like 1.5 million in a month, and that was in 2017. And it's barely sold a million in 3 years since. So I think that says something. Let's see. Yoshi's Crafted World, 2.09 million. Pokemon Tournament DX, 1.8 million. Here's a trippy one. Octopath Traveler, just outside of Japan, 1.68 million. I'm not sure why they put that in as a caveat, but I guess the Japanese sales aren't all counted? Okay. Because if you recall, it was 1.5 million in 3 weeks. So the Japanese numbers have to be better to put this between like 2 to 2.5 million, you would think, right? So, who knows? Captain Toad Treasure Tracker, 1.58 million. Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Rescue Team DX, that's a mouthful, 1.43 million. Here you go, Tyler. Nintendo Labo Toy-Con 1 Variety Kit, 1.37 million. Told you it sold well. Astral Chain, 1.14 million. And Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3 The Black Order, 1.13 million. And I know some of you will know this. Wait a minute, that's not all the million sellers. We know. Like, they don't have Rabbids on there. I know some other third-party titles that got a million sold. But still, if you combine this list, the other list, and all the other ones that are still off the list, the Switch has had a lot of million sellers, you know? And like I said in the article I wrote about this, there's two ways to define your success of a console: the console sales and the software sales. And Nintendo is killing it on all levels.
Yes, I agree. Like, to have all these games like cross that million number threshold is like, it's just a very good stable foundation for the Switch. Like, sure, we have like other systems and exclusive, like, I don't know, for example, Ghost of Tsushima recently, of course, that thing sold very well. And of course, like Spider-Man, that thing sold very well. So, but those are like main top exclusives from different companies like Insomniac. So like only like one, two, at most five games to really have your hands on for these exclusive systems. While the Switch himself is like, you got a plethora of choices, like of what you want to play as. Like Octopath Traveler, that was a great game. Perhaps a little bit niche, but definitely a good RPG, classic RPG. Of course, with Mario, Smash Bros, Mario Kart DX, ARMS, all these different titles, which pass that million threshold is just like, yeah, if you want variety, Switch got you covered. They got you covered.
Yeah, Nintendo had everything firing last month. I was excited to see those big numbers coming in. I'm curious how things are going to go this month with the new consoles launching. You know, Xbox said that they set a new record, but I hope that Nintendo can extend that streak for you know, most consoles sold. I doubt it. It's going to be really hard in a month close. Where new consoles are launching, but not impossible.
Yeah, well, actually, since we're on the topic of sales, the October NPD numbers had come out literally right before our podcast, and they announced that just in the United States in October, they sold 735,000 Switch units, which is the second highest October sales for any system ever in American history. And take a guess what the other system was that beat it.
The Wii?
Yes. In 2008, it sold 807,000 units in the U.S. in October.
Wow.
So that's impressive. And so, and they also noted that in just the U.S., the sales of the Switch are over 22 million. So that's very impressive. So they're going to win October, obviously. And then next month, or this month, is, of course, November with Black Friday, or whatever they're going to call it. So I actually think that there's a chance. There's a chance that they could go up against Sony and Microsoft and at least give them a fight. We shall see. It really just depends, because as we noted last week, they're only doing like online sales, so yes, no in-store buying. So I really think that's going to hurt them. But it just depends, because a lot of us here, but here at the Outer Haven, we're like, where's the PS5 coming in? When's the Xbox coming in? You know, where is it? You know, they're checking their Amazon accounts. It's like, you know, it's on the way. It's like, what does that mean? Is that soon? So,
my PS5 arrived at 10:30 this morning. I was not in my apartment. I'm down the beach, but I got mine on time, so I feel bad. I feel bad for those who didn't.
What games did you get? Like,
I actually didn't pick up any games yet, but I'm going to get Spider-Man and Demon's Souls.
Okay, that's better.
Okay.
Will, you were going to say something.
Yeah, because like everyone else, like again, Maces lives in Australia. He's currently getting his system there, and Cooper Keith just got his digital PS5 system earlier today. So some people have been getting their systems, and of course, like there's also one video from my friend's acquaintance on Facebook that actually saw us a line at a GameStop getting their PS5 systems. So overall, it started to slowly release, as well as online sales, because I believe I've been seeing like on Best Buy and different other online retailers, they've been like slowly releasing them in batches, like putting them on online queues. So it's slowly getting out. I mean, sure, slowly but surely.
So I'm very curious to see how this is always going to play out. And but still, like, and again, that's just the number we gave was just for the U.S. So it's very possible that between, you know, the U.K. and Japan, that it sold over a million just in October. And that, I honestly don't know why. Like, there was nothing coming out in October. It was Pikmin.
Oh, it's Pikmin 3 Deluxe.
Shut your mouth. So, like, okay, sure. So, like, if that was just random, imagine what people are going to be doing now that the holiday season is coming. So, it's going to be a very interesting sales month. That's for sure. This could possibly be one of the biggest sales months in history because of everyone wanting to get a new console for the holiday season with winter. Winter is coming. So,
and everybody trapped indoors because of
pretty much
the surge.
Yep.
At least it's not the purge yet.
Not yet.
Okay. Oh yeah, I know this is off track, but I have to talk about this. So, on Halloween night, I went over to my parents' house because we were celebrating my birthday a little early because I wasn't going to celebrate it on Election Day, obviously. And so it was Halloween, and my mom, like, really randomly decided, okay, let's actually go and do something with trick-or-treaters. And sure enough, my street was doing something, even though it was technically supposed to be over, like, 2 hours beforehand. But, of course, nobody listens. This is America. So mom is doing her thing, and we have like a tray of candy for the kids to come up and enjoy and all that. And mom is, you know, waving to them and saying hi, you know, love your costumes or whatever. And I swear, guys, I see a 10-year-old kid or so, and he's wearing a purge mask. Like the light up, like neon light purge mask. And I'm like, who let that kid do that? And she goes, oh, it's just a light up mask. Like, mom, it's from the purge. She goes, I don't know what the purge is. So I'm like describing it to her, and she goes, yeah, we're probably heading there soon. So, but yeah, that was a thing. But yeah, with lockdowns likely happening again, the desire to have something new and fresh are gonna be fresh in everyone's mind. So I'm over under all three consoles, 5 million sold in November.
And also as well, just
Under.
like
That was a question,
Answer
Will.
the question, Will.
Answer the question. Over under all three consoles combined, over or under 5 million?
Oh, all three combined, over.
Yeah, combined,
Over.
obviously.
Over.
Over.
Okay.
I think it was over.
All right, so moving on to one of my favorite pieces of news for a eagle-eyed Pokemon fan went on to Netflix, and they noted they took a screenshot stating that Part 3 of Pokemon Journeys is going to be coming in December, December 4th to be exact. And that's really fast because if I remember correctly, Pokemon Journeys Part 2 came out last month, or close enough. And so I'm excited because it means we're only a few weeks away from Part 3, and I've really been enjoying Pokemon Journeys so far. And this section, if you will, should contain the Alola reunion special where Ash meets his little brother from another mother, and it's and they're teasing some big things coming. And apparently, in a future episode, which is it being worked into Japan right now, not only are we going to meet Mewtwo again, but the original voice actor, this is only for Japan, but I find it cool anyway. The original voice actor for Mewtwo from the original Pokemon movie is coming back to voice Mewtwo again in
No
Pokemon
way.
Journeys. That's
Oh,
cool. Yeah.
that's cool. Wow.
Yeah. So again, I don't know if this is gonna happen to America because they've cast Mewtwo a few different times, but the original voice actor for Mewtwo in Japan is coming back, and I would love for them to do the same thing in America because the original Mewtwo voice was awesome. I mean, it
Yes,
was
yes, yes, yes.
menacing, he was villainous and everything. And true story, within the last week, I had to do a script of the best anime entrances ever. I put Mewtwo as number one. Because his descension from the ceiling as he appeared before Ash and the other trainers is just a boss moment. It's like, welcome, trainers. I'm like, oh crap, it's Mewtwo. So, but yeah, I'm excited for this. And you guys really need to watch Journeys. It's really worth it. I mean, it's on Netflix. Just spend $10. I mean, Tyler, you just spend hundreds on a PS, whatever. So
Yeah.
spend
I'm
$10
glued
on it.
to the Queen's Gambit right now. That's
Yeah, I've heard a
my
lot about that, you know? I might have to check that out. I'm currently watching The West Wing. You know,
Oh, I want to
us.
watch that so bad.
It's good. It's so good. And you know what the weirdest thing is? It's a show about a functioning White House. It's such an odd feeling. You know, these people are, what's the word? Competent. It's such a strange thing to see.
Yeah, that would be pretty foreign. It almost feels like it's got to be like an animated thing at this point to help you suspend disbelief.
Yeah, maybe. Also, a true story, after watching a few seasons of or a few episodes of The West Wing and enduring the election that we just did, I've decided to write a TV series called The Independent, which is basically foreshadowing my eventual run as president. So
That's going to
that's.
be fire.
Oh yeah.
I'm
Also,
in.
my vice president in this series, Keith David. I win. I win.
Okay. Yeah.
So, but yeah. So again, December 4th, Pokemon Journeys Part 3. Go and enjoy. Go get ready for that. All right. So, as many people have noted over the last several months, Animal Crossing New Horizons is, you know, addicting. And Nintendo knows that because it's sold over 26 million units in less than 8 months. So, even the president, Shuntaro Furukawa, had a lot to say on this. He goes, quote, "The sales pace of Animal Crossing New Horizons has eased compared to the period around its initial release, but among all of our titles, this one continues to maintain high sales levels. As I mentioned in response to a previous question, this title is also driving Nintendo Switch hardware sales in Asian markets, which have relatively smaller sales numbers than the markets in Japan, the US, and Europe. Going forward, we will continue to implement in-game events and would like to create a situation where consumers will keep enjoying the game for a long time. This will be the first year sales seasons for Animal Crossing New Horizons. We hope even more people will take that opportunity to purchase the game, end quote. Let me summarize that for you. They want you on your island forever. All right? They want you on that island. All right? They need you on that island. Okay? And they're going to keep updating and giving you these little tidbits to make you come back and remake your island 1,000 times because they want you to. Because they know you will. They know you have nothing better to do with your time than to work on your little island. That's why I refuse to get it. Because I know that that's what Nintendo wants me to do. To buy it. To make an island. To share it all over social media. I refuse, Nintendo. I refuse to go to your island.
It's like, it's gonna be interesting how it's gonna be at 1 year anniversary, because it's that's how Animal Crossing gets you, even with like when I played on the original GameCube, like shaping how it is, and of course with the terraform, it's a creative paradise. It's just imagination to the extreme for Animal Crossing. So just like, you can't escape the island. It's just like, yeah, all the happy cheery, yes, your escape from reality, this is all you need. Like, Nintendo, are you trying to indoctrinate us?
So, and we have resisted, all three of us do not have Animal Crossing, and we're better for it.
Not yet anyway.
But 26 million people have fallen into the trap. Poor souls. You should have known better. You should have known that Nintendo was going to make sure you not just get the game and, you know, play it for eternity. Why do you think the pandemic happened? They wanted to boost the sales. It's known. John Oliver even acknowledges it, all right? So, but yeah, seriously, though, like, this game has been insane in its sales numbers. It's just outpaced everything that you can imagine. It's going to be the best-selling game on Switch, like, bar none. I guarantee it. So, for them to say, yeah, we're going to make sure that you play this forever, by all means. Because, I mean, like, I know people that are still playing New Leaf, and that was, like, what, 8 years ago?
Oh, man, that thing stayed alive for so long. Man.
Yeah.
That's really what they want. They want you to stay on your island for, like, 6 to 7 more years, and then... Yeah. Move to whatever they do next. Your peninsula, I would imagine, is what.
Yeah, it's like let's be honest here. What is next? Because they've had, you know, the original Animal Crossing, which is like a town. Then they did City Folk. Then they did New Leaf. All right. So like that was when you were the mayor of the town. Now you have an island. What's the upscale? Like, is it really like a continent? Is it like a state? Like, are they gonna send you into space? That'll be interesting.
I got it. Are creating a landmass that's in an infinite void surrounding that maybe goes around a hot object in the middle, and you get to like create, you know, what the land looks like and what the life forms are, and that's what it is. And Tom Nook will sell you, of course, your brand new universe.
Of course, the problem with the problem with that though is that means that Tom Nook apparently got rich enough off of our blood, sweat, and bells to buy an infinite void and sell it to
you
us.
You know, he's not like even there in his physical form. I like the game, like you boot it up and it just like, you know, you're looking into his eyes, and like in his eyes is the universe. That's
so you're saying he's ascended to a higher plane?
He's like a celestial being at this
point. Oh gosh.
Yeah.
That is the power of capital for you. That can to a new realm.
Will, check your mic. But yeah, like I don't need those kinds of thoughts, Tyler, of Tom Nook being at a higher plane. So
it does make you think, though. What if we all already were?
Oh, shut up! I will go Agent Smith on your carcass. Don't think I won't. I have the whole speech he did to Morpheus memorized. So, and I do a decent Agent Smith impersonation. But that's for another time. So another thing that Nintendo revealed in the meeting that Shintaro Furukawa was doing, when he said that quote, he said that apparently when people are done wanting to play Animal Crossing, that they go and get Pikmin 3 Deluxe. Which is odd, because that means that they already have like sales figures or something, because again, Pikmin came at the end of October, and yet they can already tell that people are getting Animal Crossing and then getting Pikmin. So, not sure what to make of that.
It is surprising because, I mean, Pikmin, I guess on like the most surface level, which is probably the level that a lot of these customers are on, Pikmin looks like a really accessible franchise, kind of similar to that Animal Crossing. But Pikmin is pretty complex for a Nintendo franchise, you know, like the management of, I wonder what the people who get it actually end up thinking of it, because I'm sure that it's a little different than what they expect.
I guess the reason probably why they went to Pikmin 3 is because, one, I think it's perhaps they are appealed by the whole cutesy outlook of Pikmin, and of course the three main characters of Al and everyone else. But perhaps it's just like, oh, again, whole cutesy outlook. Sure, like, oh, look at this little cute little Pikmin. But nope, you gotta deal with Bulbasaurs and big creatures that kind of try to eat your Pikmin and try to kill you on this planet. It's like, maybe that's the reason why. It's just like they're absorbed by the cutesy outlook.
I've honestly never played Pikmin. I mean, I think I played a demo once, I think. So, I don't know. But again, hopefully if the sales do go as, I guess, Furukawa is implying, then, you know, maybe we'll finally get Pikmin 4, whatever the heck that is. So, we shall see. Alright, next up we have Pokemon Sword and Shield, which the Pokemon company decided to pull back the curtain, if you will, on why they do what they do, because a lot of people have been wondering why they went with the expansion pass model for the Isle of Arbor and Crown Tundra instead of doing the third game. And the Pokemon Company said in an interview with Game Informer, quote, "There was an element of apprehension in moving to a downloadable model, but we were confident that players would enjoy exploring the new environments, uncovering new storylines, and meeting new human characters and Pokemon in both the Isle of Armor and the Crown Tundra. With past titles, players generally had to collect and raise their Pokemon completely from scratch. So with the DLC, we thought players would enjoy being able to use their favorite Pokemon right out of the gate." Quote. So, I get this, because, yeah, while it is fun to play the third title, whether it was, you know, Crystal or Platinum or whatnot, playing the same game over again three times, not always the best. I mean, yes, you usually start out, well, at least I do, start out with a brand new starter Pokemon, so you have at least a slightly fresh experience, and sometimes you'll, you know, try and make a different team to, you know, go and battle with, but you're still restarting the same game and you're not having that much different of a storyline. Whereas in the DLC, you have like very focused storylines that are completely different, and like they said, you have your Pokemon from the outset. So I could see the appeal of that. Clearly I'm the only one.
Unfortunately, I haven't really got too far in with Pokemon, and we're going to just, with again, ever since the whole kerfuffle with the whole Pokédex, the World Pokédex, it's forever going to be really debated. Like, should it have been all these Pokemon you grew up with at the start, or as he says, like, want to have new Pokemon to start with, just so to get given some spotlight. So, again, that debate will be forever be.
Tyler?
Sorry, my roommate had texted me something was going wrong in our apartment, so I kind of missed what you were talking about. I apologize.
It's all right. The Pokemon Company said that the reason they did the DLC instead of the third game was because they wanted the players to enjoy new stories and characters without having to restart from the beginning.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think that's DLC kind of done right. Your point about the starter Pokemon is a good one too, like playing the same game over and over again, just switching that one tiny detail, especially when you get so many other, you get the same Pokemon to start the game, it really, you know, it really isn't too much different. So yeah, I think they have the right idea there. I still didn't get this DLC, so I really don't have a ton of thoughts on how the execution was.
I still need to,
but I appreciate the theory.
Yeah, I hear Crown Tundra's really good. People are getting shiny Pokemon out the wazoo.
Yes, the Crown Tundra is arguably one of the best ones, especially like the raids, as we're going to that one strong Pokemon, a Zygarde, something like that.
Zygarde.
Yeah. It's like that, arguably one of the more harder raid Pokemon. And yeah, apparently that's the best part of it. Yeah.
So I'll see if I'm getting that, because let's see, I gotta finish the All Stars, and then we got Hyrule Warriors is next week, so I'm looking forward to that.
Oh yeah.
A week from tomorrow at the time of this recording. So that's something to look forward to. And then finally, Nintendo has confirmed, I guess, that in their minds, the Nintendo Switch is in the middle of its life cycle. So that's not too surprising, because we're technically in year four right now, and that would mean that, you know, they're planning this to go 7-8 years, which is totally fine given the sales numbers they're doing, the titles that they keep cranking out. 2021 is going to be packed, obviously. And so, yeah, that makes sense, and this gives them a chance to see what the Xbox Series X and the PS5 do and see how they can, you know, potentially challenge that in a certain way, obviously.
Right. Like, I do agree that it is in its current state right now. I can only imagine, like, if Nintendo decides to take some ideas from Sony and Microsoft, we're going to obviously the whole rumored Switch Pro, give it a little extra oomph to it. So yeah, I think Nintendo's definitely gonna keep their cards closed, see what the other players, Sony and Microsoft, are doing with their consoles, and who knows, perhaps they're gonna use it to basically improve upon themselves and see how they're gonna go from there.
Yeah, Nintendo's done a great job of kind of reestablishing their connections with a lot of third parties, and with, you know, 69 million Switches out there, the install base is so huge that I think before I thought it was really important to get a pro version out, because, you know, I'm afraid the third parties are going to leave and they're not going to be bringing their games over. And to an extent, that's still going to be true. They're not going to be able to bring as many games over with the disparity being even, I mean, just so different in power without a pro version. But still, there's so much incentive to develop for Switch still. So I would think they're still primed or poised to kind of hang in there. Plus the it still has kind of its niche in the market with the hybrid factor. So I'm curious to see how the first couple months are going to go. But if 2020 or 2021 has a huge lineup of great games like we expect, I do think they'll be able to hang in there.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, it's always hard to tell how long these consoles' life cycles are going to be. Some are always going to be sure, some will be long. It just depends on the sales and everything. Like, we all saw what happened with Wii U. They couldn't move on from that fast enough, versus a Switch, where they're clearly aiming to keep going as long as possible, especially with the sales numbers. So their main task right now is just to keep the games coming, which they'll be doing for 2021, obviously, but 2022 and so on and so forth. Yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see what they do there. So, all right, now for our main event, we're gonna have a little bit of fun and poke fun at what just happened in the world with the election, because we are gonna have our own election, but not for something as such insubstantial as a country. I mean, come on, think bigger, guys. We're gonna have an election to see who should lead the Nintendo brand into the future, into the back half of the Switch era and beyond, because these are the matters that are what really matter. And as we all know, Tyler really doesn't like the current president of Nintendo, so this is the perfect time to substitute him. So you're welcome, Tyler. See, this is, I'm so magnanimous.
All right.
Yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Nintendo election 2020. So here's how it's going to work. It's a two-part thing, obviously. So not unlike a true presidential election, we here are going to have a debate focusing on our candidates for president and vice president of the Nintendo brand. We're going to debate each other, and then you, yes, you, the people, like a true election, are going to vote for who wins. And there's going to be the popular vote win, and then there's going to be electoral college, in which I will win, obviously, because this whole system is So, because I won this election. I know I won this election by a lot. But so I will go first. And ladies and gentlemen, when you think about a leader, what do you think of? Do you think of someone who could just talk a good game? No! Think of someone who takes action, who has the courage to take action, who goes into battle and leads the way to save the day, to save the world, and in this case, save the brand. I speak, of course, of my candidate for president, Link, from The Legend of Zelda. And I know what you're thinking, but Todd, Link, he's so soft-spoken. But that's the thing. In this age that we live in, we talk way too much. All right? And I'm a podcast host. I would know. So we need someone who will not talk 1,000 words and say nothing. We need someone who will say, ah! And go into work. Go and do the work. And that is what Link does. In every adventure he goes on, he does the work. It doesn't matter if he's time traveling. It doesn't matter if he's on a vast ocean that's stupid to sail by and we have to follow a map that makes absolutely no sense and then go doing fishing with cranes. Not bitter at all. But every task that he does, he finishes. Every single one. Except in that one timeline where he dies. But we don't count that because timelines in Legend of Zelda literally mean nothing. But even when he fails and gets, you know, basically healed up and reincarnated for 100 years, he comes back stronger than ever. And he will go and fight and save the day. It doesn't matter that he doesn't talk that much or at all. It matters that he does the work. And you're like, well, I understand that, Todd. I understand what you're going with there, but that's not enough. Especially in the political climate that we're in the gaming industry and beyond. We need someone to handle the politics. And that's why I offer to you my VP candidate, Midna, from The Legend of Zelda. Because who better than an impish queen of the Shadow Realm, or sorry, Twilight Realm, same thing, Twilight Realm, to help out Link. Because while Link goes and does the work, Midna will make sure everyone stays in freaking line. Because no one's going to screw with Midna, alright? She's a powerful sorceress on her own. She has the Forbidden Shadow, alright? And she is just radiant, okay? She's awesome. Midna's awesome. She deserves to be a character in Smash Brothers. So this is the perfect combination because they work so well together. They save two realms together, ladies and gentlemen. And with Link doing the action and Midna doing the talking, there is no reason that Nintendo won't have a bright future. Unless you think that they haven't proven their worth, let me remind you of one very simple fact. When the Nintendo Switch was announced, we were all curious. When the Nintendo Switch had a release date, we were happy. But when did the release date get announced? Alongside Breath of the Wild. The perfect launch title for the Switch that helped catapult the Switch into success. Game of the year, every which way but up. And it continues to sell well. And what's the game we're all looking forward to? Hyrule Warriors and Breath of the Wild 2. The hero you can trust. The leader you can trust. The games you can trust. Link, Midna, 2020. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Will, all would right. you like to? Yeah, Will.
Yeah,
you
go Will, and then Tyler was last.
Okay, so you argue in regard to Link is definitely one of the preferred candidates for running the land of Nintendo. But I'm gonna argue. We're going to my nominee that my candidate has served brand for more than 30 years. Pretty much near its inception, Nintendo, he has been ruling Nintendo all these years. And he's not just anybody. He's not just any reincarnation of a hero back in the of a sky temple of some sort. This guy is just a normal guy, normal plumber in the realm of Brooklyn, and he has saved the land so many times over. That's right, I'm talking about the Italian plumber in Brooklyn, Mario himself. And of course, he is pretty much indeed the quintessential piece of Nintendo. He has been surviving the brand as you said, we just celebrated 35 years of the guy. Like, who was the person that brought us from the crash, the dreaded game crash all those years ago back in 1985? It was Mario.
83.
Back in 1993. Oh, anything. Sorry. Okay. Sorry.
No, you're history checker. Before you defend your candidate, man. Come
All
on.
Right, fact checker. All right, fact checker. I concede. Again, Mario is the one who saved the game industry overall. And who would better, with all those years of experience, to save Nintendo again? Especially in this realm political climate. Like, an Italian plumber from Brooklyn who has saved in many lands and go back to space. You don't see Link going to space. Like, the only instance we have Link going to space was with, was it happening in Breath of the Wild? We got to the Sheikah Temple back in the DLC? I don't recall. Something around that.
There also was, like, rumor they were going to do aliens in Breath of the Wild, but then they scrapped that. So, you know, it happens.
Mm-hmm. But Mario, he is the all-around man for the job. He plays golf. He plays baseball. He goes to Mario Kart. He goes to space. He's a world traveler. He is cultured. If you have not seen his exploits in Odyssey, he is cultured throughout the lands, from Western cultures to Eastern cultures to even space culture with space bunnies. Like, he can get to and know the people of hearts and minds. Heck, he even made friends with dinosaurs. Heck, he became a dinosaur to get to know the hearts and minds of one extinct species. So, who would better not to understand the politics of the realm than the main Mario Man himself for over 35 years? For he is a man of experience and a man of culture. And you're probably wondering, who would be his vice president? Would it be his brother Luigi? Or would it be main girl Peach? I argue no. Those are not the nominee for vice president, because there's only one other vice presidential candidate I think would be very good compliments to Mario. And this may be a shocker, but I argue the Princess of Sarasaland, Daisy. Because, like, I'm sorry, as much as Princess Peach may be revered as the one true couple with Mario, you gotta give prop. You have to admit that Princess Peach's security details isn't one of the best deals with all the incidents of Bowser kidnapping her all many years, 35 years plus. And only one time that Princess of Sarasaland, Daisy, was ever kidnapped. And that was only that one adventure on the Game Boy, as I recall. it's been so long. But that's, again, only one incident. As far as I believe her security detail is definitely in check. So, the reason why I believe that Daisy will be a great vice presidential candidate for Mario is because, one, like Mario, she's just a girl, you know, she's got your back. She can hit hard and does stand her ground going to any kind of competition. If everyone can recall, when she makes her leagues in Super Mario Strikers, she is all about attitude, girl. Like, if you want something that is spicy, hot, and just really will not hesitate to punch you in the face. Yeah. She will stand around to any kind of bully, whether it be Bowser, Donkey Kong, or any space deity. Actually, she even fought against aliens, last I checked, if I recall correctly. But regarding to everything else, Princess Sarasaland, Daisy, she just speaks around attitude. And if anyone can keep Mario leveled, it's not Peach, it would be Daisy herself. So from everything else, from her ideas of, sure, she may not be well known as like another princess of Toads out the Totsu Kingdom, Daisy of Sarasaland is just the perfect, like, all around candidate to just be, as like Mario, be a voice of the people. And of course, just, I believe, is also the perfect candidate for true gender equality. So that's why I argue for Mario and Daisy 2020.
Okay, Tyler.
Okay. So you guys, you picked good candidates, but I'm looking at the times and I'm thinking, you know, we got a pandemic going on. We got new consoles launching. Everybody had a rough year this year. And, you know, what we need right now is somebody in charge who, you know, has been around for a long time and who is a traditionalist in some ways, but always has an eye towards the future and innovating. My candidate comes from one of the royal families in Nintendo. Of course, I'm talking about the Donkey Kong crew. Now, Donkey Kong himself, phenomenal choice, but I just don't know if he's the leader that we need right now. I mean, yes, he would be a phenomenal leader. Phenomenal, of course. He's a great choice. He was my original choice before we started. And you know Diddy is my favorite Kong, but... Will, you were onto something with Daisy and gender equality. I think we need Dixie Kong as the president. Dixie Kong at the top of the ticket. And I put Dixie Kong at the top of the ticket for a couple of reasons. One, debut game, Donkey Kong Country 2, the best Donkey Kong Country game, one of the best 2D platformers of all time. Everything about the game is so perfect. The momentum, the precision platforming. But Dixie, as much as I love Diddy, and he's still my favorite Kong, Dixie is probably more fun to play as. The ponytail twirl is an innovation, a creative twist on a classic moveset that just adds so much to her versatility, to her skill set. Donkey Kong Country has always shown what Nintendo technology can do at its best. Tropical Freeze is a masterclass in level design. The original Donkey Kong Country, as I talked about previously, extended the Super Nintendo's life and really kind of stuck Nintendo back in front of the Sega Genesis at the end of the early 90s console wars. And the Donkey Kong family, I mean, that's what kicked off Miyamoto's career, the greatest developer in Nintendo history. So you need the family name, but you also, it's time for a woman. It's time for a woman to be in charge, and Dixie would have the great Diddy Kong backing her. She'd have the great Donkey Kong as an advisor. And Dixie Kong should be added to Super Smash Bros. Next year. That's the final wrinkle. Because you know, K. Rool was a great ad, very exciting, glad we finally got him. But it is a crime that we have not gotten Dixie Kong in Smash. Her moveset would be great. Everybody said she should be an echo of Diddy. That's just not true. She has a ton of different things that she could do with her hair. Sakurai could get creative with her. And we need a new Donkey Kong game next year, and Dixie should be in it. So I hope that 2021 is the year of Dixie, and that is why I put her at the very top of the ticket. Now, for vice president, I'm sticking with the female. I think we got to go with Samus Aran. I mean, I'm not a huge Metroid fan, but Metroid Prime 4 is going to be a huge game. Everybody is excited for Metroid Prime 4. It's going to be a game that pushes the limits of what the Switch is capable of. I expect it to come out on Switch Pro. So right there, you're looking towards the future. You're planning ahead. With these next consoles being as powerful as they are, it's important that Nintendo's technology doesn't suddenly become archaic. I don't expect that to happen, but a stronger version of a console or a game similar to Donkey Kong Country in Metroid Prime 4 that can really show, hey, this console still has a lot to offer, we can still get more out of it, is just so important. And the personality and attitude, Dixie, phenomenal. She's a fun-loving lady. She plays the guitar. She's having a good time. She loves blowing bubble gum and shooting people with her bubble gum pop gun. Great stuff. Samus adds an air of severity to the ticket. It's a lot like Kamala and Joe, actually. Joe, you know, he's a fun guy. He's a goofy guy. Kamala is like the efficiency, you know? Like, I picture her kind of doing a lot of the government running now that she's in office. I think Dixie at the top adds a fun element that people can get behind. And Samus really running the nitty-gritty, getting into the details and kind of showing what Nintendo has to offer going forward. It's a match made in heaven. You just, you know, two classics with Nintendo since the very beginning, the long lineage, and yet the innovation at the same time. You couldn't get a better ticket.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. All right. We now each have a chance to counter each other's proposals and bash them entirely like real politicians. So, for example, Will, how basic can you get with your picks, man? I mean, I started off this candidacy by nominating people who actually get things done, and you have a plumber who can't even defeat a Koopa for 35 years. Like, how many times has Bowser come back? All right, how many times? And this is the same Bowser over and over again, and yet he keeps just letting Bowser come in, take the princess, and then he has to go all over. When Link kills Ganon, Ganon dies, and then he has to reincarnate himself in some future land or timeline or whatever. That's not on Link. That's on the curse of demise, not his fault. So you picking Mario is basically saying, I'm going for the safest possible option because, yeah, he's going to let bad things happen, but I guess he makes up for his mistakes. We shouldn't have to worry about that, Will. This is not how you lead the brand. Letting mistakes happen. The mistakes is how the Wii U happened. All right? You know, bad marketing, bad branding, bad games, kind of. So, like, that's just not cool. A Daisy? Really? I mean, wow. Like, I get going for, like, kind of like the Sarah Palin out of nowhere pick, but at least have some strength like Tyler did with Samus, all right? You know, the Kamala Harris pick. You know, I can dig that. Daisy? Really? No. Tyler, on to you. So, I understand wanting the all-female ballot. I actually wrote a script recently for work that suggested
this is gonna be good.
Hold on. Let me finish. As I was saying, I wrote a script recently, and I noted that given certain political venues, it's incredibly possible that we could have a female Republican and Democratic candidate in the year 2028, depending on what Joe Biden does. So, I like the idea of having an all-female candidacy, but the problem here is the wrong order. Samus should be president, because we all know that if Dixie gets the White House, the Nintendo penthouse, all she's going to do is monkey around.
Yeah,
it's right there.
Yeah, you're right, though. She would. It'd be pretty fun.
Yeah, your choices are bananas. I mean, come on. I mean,
monkeying around is great.
I know, but I mean, I know you want to be the King of Kong here, but it doesn't work in leading the brand. And while I'm all for giving certain people the chance to shine brighter than than what came before, like what Dixie would love to do, no doubt, with Diddy and Donkey, it just doesn't work. And let's talk Samus. All right, first of all, putting a bounty hunter in a leading role, she's the one who takes orders. She's not the one who gives them.
Look,
all
Dick
right?
Cheney was the vice president. He was a bit of a bounty hunter.
I'm gonna let
Samus can do it.
I'm gonna let that slide. But it wouldn't work. And let's be honest, she's a person who's mobile. She never stays in a place at one time. Plus because of Other M, which I hate bringing up, but she totally has PTSD. It doesn't work. That's not someone we need in the White House or the Nintendo penthouse where she's crying that Ridley is around somewhere and she's trying to shoot him even though he's not there. Like, you gotta think of the bigger picture, Tyler. You have a presidential candidate who doesn't talk and just keeps acting like an ape, and then you gotta I should have said going ape. That would have been a better pun. But then you got Samus, who's got her own issues, and she keeps losing her stuff. Like, every Metroid game, she's at full power and she loses her stuff. We need someone at full power all the time, and that's Link and Midna. All right, I have spoken.
I find it funny that you you target Dixie for not talking and just monkeying around, as though Link doesn't break all the random pots that he comes across. Like, he's going to be in the Oval Office just like smashing stuff. Like, come on, you're looking for rupees. It's a terrible pick, and it's just, I find it appalling that you would turn on Dixie. Kind of like, listen, she might be an animal, she might be a monkey. But monkeys
might
are intelligent. Yeah, no. Well,
might
no.
be a monkey.
It's
what
like
else, what is she? She's not a monkey.
Listen, chimpanzees evolved into humans. So I think. Double check me on that.
We're
but
not,
I'm
we're
pretty
not
sure
about evolution.
That's
this
what happened.
Another
so she's pretty intelligent, and she can blow bubblegum like a huge. Like, come on, Dixie's pretty smart. She could run it. If Trump could run the country for 4 years, I'm pretty sure Dixie could do. I'm pretty sure. And you know, your points on it being reversed, it's fair. I, with these picks, was kind of going for the tie-in of like impacting Nintendo's future, and I really want Dixie Kong in Smash Bros. Samus is already in Smash Bros. So I think if we have multiple Dixie Kong appearances next year, it's gonna be glorious. Now, you know, is Samus probably better to be the president? Maybe, but like you said, she can't really stay in one place.
No.
Like, that's why, as the Kamala, she's going to be moving around. She's going to be doing things. She's going to be, you know, on the phones, making calls. She's going to be traveling to places. She's going to be riling up the base. Like, she's going to be out there in the front. Dixie, she's going to be having a good time, which is what I want Nintendo to do. I want Nintendo to have a good time, make me have a good time. You couldn't, you know, yes, okay, maybe Diddy Kong would be better because he's the best Kong, but he's going to be right there. He's going to be the best first gentleman in the history of Nintendo.
Wait, you're saying him and Dixie are a couple?
Well, they are.
Is that canon now?
They're dating. That's Dixie's Diddy's girlfriend. No, you know, I don't think they're married, but you know, he'll be the first gentleman.
Uh-huh.
And Donkey Kong will be Bobby Kennedy of the family.
Dude,
you know,
oh,
he's the
no.
kingmaker.
Don't
Lanky
do that.
Kong, Lanky Kong is going to get a great position as probably treasurer, honestly.
Gosh.
And I got to argue against Link as well, because like the way I see it, you want to have someone who is basically led by so-called gods and goddesses' destiny. Like, sure, he may have the whole artifact of the Triforce of Courage. But unfortunately, as far as concerned, like, he only represents one part of the trifecta. Again, you need power and wisdom to balance out everything of that world of Nintendo. And he only represents one part. and regardless of his soft spoken, sure, he may have the military experience, but he is, as you said, as Tyler said, he's a pilferer. He like wants to throw break jars anywhere just to go find some spare change. He is cheap. He is very cheap. He will do everything to get a single rupee. And regardless of Midna, like, sure, she definitely has the political experience of handling the realm, of course, with that whole civil war that she had planted, but it's something else. Again, how would she even come back to the realm of Vendetta? Again, we saw her break the mirror.
Yeah,
there's no way.
Dude, if your biggest counter is, hey, let's remember that she's technically in her realm, you're kind of stretching things, because let's not forget, how are we gonna contact Samus? Like, how is Tyler gonna call up Samus to get her out of space and to come to Earth to run for VP? All right, don't talk to me about logistics. Assume they're gonna be there,
like Nick Fury did with like getting Captain Marvel to come back during
there
Endgame.
You go.
I'm just gonna push a button.
You got a beeper. Okay, we'll make it work, Will. All right, life finds a way. Isn't that right, Jeff Goldblum? So
you want to use magic to basically solve all of Nintendo's of the problems of Nintendo. Oh, jeez. Like, as far as I'm concerned, that's one thing I appreciate about Mario. He is the normal guy that everyone can relate to. Again, he is a man of all fields. Remember, he applied to the Olympics. The only time I see Link at the Olympics was with go-karts. Like, the only time, and last time I go check, even Dixie Kong had some Olympic experience back in his with Sonic. So yes, only Mario and Dixie have Olympics experience. Link, on the other hand, has no regard to Olympic experience at all. So sure,
who cares?
He has military experience.
What does being Olympian have to do with being a leader, Will? Like, how many presidents have been Olympians? Zero!
Balance of all skills, Tyler.
Oh,
balance of all skills. And we're going to all that whole argument about, remember, even though Mario and Bowser have been eternal rivals, perhaps even rivaling that of enemies, do not forget, there is a side of reconciliation. Because if you want to make friends with your enemies, you need to like have the heart to forgive. And last I checked, Link always manages to go for the kill, never reconciliation. While Mario, he always reconciles. Whether it be friend or foe, he always reconciles. And that, I say, is a better candidate to heal the wounds of America or Nintendo.
Okay. A, wrong. Okay. B, Link has reconciled with certain enemies, including in Subspace Emissary, where he put him and Zelda put their differences away with Ganondorf so they could go tackle Taboo. So, yeah. Also, Link killing his enemies proves that he's willing to get the job done when it's needed. If he pulled a Mario and just let Ganon run over, they would never be out of the Age of Darkness. Whereas Mario just, you know, makes Bowser trip with his own feet, dumps him into lava, and then Bowser comes back a little while later and starts the whole mess over again. It takes Ganon years and sometimes centuries to come back, and even then it's not exactly in his final form like we saw in Breath of the Wild. So Link gets the job done and at least protects people for a good stretch of time, where for Mario it's like, okay, Bowser should be showing up any minute now. So that's called decisive action. Or in the words of President Josiah Bartlett, I will blow them out of the sky with the fury of God's own thunder. That's a West Wing reference, by the way. I'm getting Tyler ready. I'm getting Tyler ready for when he does the binge. So, yeah. You're welcome. So, yeah. So that's called decisiveness, Will, which is what we need in a leader, especially in these times where, you know, everyone's thinking we need to do one thing when we need to do another. Link will get the job done, and Midna will be there to back him up. Tyler,
I was following orders that were put in the chat. Yes, but I do have final thoughts, and it's on Midna.
Okay.
The body of work. Is there enough? You know,
yes.
Is there enough? I just don't think that there is. There's an inexperience there, and you could say the same for Daisy. Like, yeah, she does all the sporting stuff, but like, I don't know what else she really offers. Like, you need experience in these times. There's new consoles launching. We're in a pandemic. You need experience. And that's what you get with a Kong Aaron ticket, you know? Like, you get that experience and you get that innovation. It's just not close. I know, you know, that the haters are just going to say, oh, Mario, that's the president. Great. But you got to think, what's the answer now? For today's challenges, My ticket wins, no doubt, hands down. It's over. It's not even close.
First of all, Link has the experience of literal generations within his soul and body. That's why he keeps, you know, winning. And then Midna led a nation, a realm, for who knows how long before Xan dethroned her. And then it was her guiding influence, not Link, who helped get the Forbidden Shadow together, and then go fight Xan, and then go fight Ganon. And then she was willing to sacrifice herself to go try and stop Ganon. And then she realized that if there was a danger to the realm, if the Twilight Realm was still able to be reached, and so she shattered the mirror. That is the experience of leadership, to know that sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself to make sure that the people you love, she totally loves Link, ship it, are protected. That is the wisdom of experience, all right? So, yeah.
Booyah. Yeah, and I guess she is a princess of Twilight. Yeah, that's a good point. You got me there.
I know I did. That's why my card wins. But we shall stop the debates now. The 2020 Nintendo election debate is now over, and it's time for you to decide. Now, I got my list out. Here's how the voting shall work. We have the poll that Tyler is going to put up right now. All right, you will vote for the candidates you want to win: Link, Midna, Mario, Daisy, and Dixie, Samus. Then your votes are going to be compiled per state and region, and then we're going to base those off of the demographics of the ratings of how you voted, your age bracket and everything, and then we will divide those up into... I'm just joking, okay?
Right, like the electoral college has screwed us over many times over.
We just need to we need to abolish it and just go back to popular vote.
I am pro-electoral college, and I will die on that hill.
Wow.
The country is so different. Like, the people living in North Dakota live a completely different life than the people living in New York. Like, they need a louder voice, or else they're not going to be recognized at
all. But there's a difference. Oh, we're not doing this. We're not doing this. That's an actual political debate. So anyway, Tyler, it has. Do you have the poll up?
It is up. So, people, this was embarrassing. Todd had to put a message into our chat, telling me to get the poll ready. And
I just wanted to make sure.
I felt a lot of shame when
this was not a rag. This one honestly was not a rag. I was just honestly wanted to make sure that the poll was up so that they could go and vote. So, yes, go and find the poll. Vote for whoever you think it would make the best president, vice president, and we will see who wins next week. All right? And of course, let us know what you thought of all the news we broke down today, from the continued success of Nintendo Switch and all of its software titles, to the return of Pokemon Journeys on Netflix, to Sword and Shield's revelation on why they did the DLC content, to Animal Crossing and Pikmin 3, and so on and so forth. So, for Telly's Tyler and Wario Will, I am Triforce Todd, and ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lives. We made it to the end of the level, so raise the flag!